Welcome to the Pastured Pig Podcast,
where we share the successes and challenges of raising pigs on pasture.
We talk to producers all over the country,
from small homesteads to large commercial pasture operations.
Whether you're new to pastured pigs or have been raising hogs for decades,
we hope you hear new ideas and new perspectives on pasturing hogs.
Here's your host, Troy McClung.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Pastured Pig Podcast. I'm your host, Troy, as Kelly just said. It's not like we have any other hosts around here. I am swimming in a sea of rain. West Virginia, I believe, has about reached its saturation point. If we don't get some dry and I can get my bush hog fixed, I broke one of the blades on it. If I don't get that fixed and get some dry, we may have to napalm the valley. It's getting a little out of hand. But I guess it's better than the alternative. I'd much rather have wet and green and lushy versus drought. But that's what we're dealing with right now. My pigs are developing web feet. My chickens start to look like ducks. All these things are coming together. But as far as updates here, I'm recording these bumpers as I do these episodes. So I'm going to try to do updates that make sense. And, you know, really not get bogged down in the weeds of it. It's not like you guys come to the podcast to hear me ramble on about what's going on here. It's more obviously of the guests that we have, and I recognize that. But so I'll just throw little updates off and on out there. So really nothing big as far as pastured pigs go here. We're actually, and this will be something we'll get into later, we're actually looking at doing a total reset, but we'll see. And don't even know what that even means just yet, but it's kind of a time to kind of stop and reassess and change gears in some areas. So we'll obviously document that as we go along here on the podcast and, of course, on our channel as well, once we figure out exactly what that means. So let's talk about today's interview. Today's interview, I was really excited to get Chuck from Sheridan Park Farms back on here. And Chuck's been on here multiple times. I've been to Chuck's farm. We've become good friends over the years. And he's going to be one of the speakers at our presenters at our homesteading conference in September up here in Charleston. So be sure to check that out, homesteading-ish.com, if you're interested. I wanted him on the podcast today to talk about what he's doing with market sales. And Chuck is multiple protein sources. He's not just pigs, but he has a lot of things going on. But he's really having great success with market. In fact, it's funny, you'll hear it, and I don't want to give too much of the interview away, but he talks about just how long he's been farming. So when he went from a one-acre plot in a suburban area to the 70 acres and doing what he's doing now is only the span of 6 years, which I think is just fantastic. And of course, throw COVID in the middle of that as well. So he really hit the ground running. He's got a good business head on his shoulders. He's got a great partner with Sandra, his wife. I mean, the two of them just tag team like crazy and get stuff done. And I've seen it firsthand on their farm. But what we're going to talk about is his efforts at the market and how he's evolving his setup in the market to make things more efficient, but also more profitable. But I'm not going to give any more of that away. We'll let Chuck tell his story. I'll catch you guys on the back end. Today, we're going back to an oldie but a goodie. We're going south North Carolina. I'm not saying oldie as in this is an older farmer. I'm just saying oldie as somebody that I've known for a long time and had on the podcast several times and glad to have him back on. So before I dig myself a deeper hole, everybody say hi to Chuck Lewis from Sheridan Park Farms down in North Carolina. Welcome, Chuck.
Hey, Troy. How are you?
Man, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I consider myself like fine wine. I get better with age.
That's right, man.
So, yeah. Let's go with that. How about that?
I like that. Yes. That's what I try to convince other people as well, that with age comes wisdom. And sometimes I prove that wrong. More times than not, yep. I prove that wrong.
Exactly.
Okay. So the reason why we're having Chuck back on today, it's just fun to talk with Chuck. But Chuck's got a lot going on, and I thought it would be good to talk about his latest iteration when it comes to market. Now, Chuck's not a one-trick pony. He's not just doing pastured pork. He's got a lot of things, but this conversation is very germane to pastured pigs when it comes to getting our products out in front of our audience. And so first, before we go into the tail end, we're going to be sensitive to those who may not have started with us from episode one all the way to episode, 118, I believe. So they may not be familiar with Chuck. So Chuck, first let's do that. Give me the 40,000 foot elevation of Sheridan Park Farms, kind of how you got where you are and where you are right now.
Sure. So my wife, Sandra, and I, we actually started farming in 2018. And just a little bit of a backstory on that. We were living on an acre that was basically driveway and yard. That was it. And Sandra, who is a fabulous cook, decided she wanted to do an internship at a butcher shop. So she found a lady that would let her come in and, would let her come in and kind of learn the craft of butchery work. And she came home one day and she said, I think there's something to this local food, know your farmer thing. And I said, well, I'm sure there probably is. And I kept on scrolling through Facebook or whatever it was I was doing at the time. So a couple of weeks later, we were zooming through Netflix and we watched the movie Food, Inc. I'm sure lots of folks have seen that. And that was my first introduction to Joel Salatin and the whole regenerative ag thing. And I said, daggone, I think maybe she's right. Maybe she's onto something here. Well, about that same time, I was in the middle of changing jobs. And so we were going to have to move because of my job. And we thought, well, if we're going to sell this property and buy some more property, let's buy a little bit of land so we can, grow some of our own food and feed ourselves and kind of follow some of this regenerative ag stuff. So we ended up buying just right at 20 acres south of Greensboro, which is about the third largest city in North Carolina. And on the week of Valentine's Day, 2018, I bought 40 broiler chickens and 6 pigs. And I would not recommend undertaking 2 enterprises that you have absolutely zero experience in to anybody at one time. That was fraught and ripe for disaster. So long story short, we ended up on that 20 acre farm for a couple of years. COVID hit. We had the opportunity to move back closer to home. We now own a 70 acre farm in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains here in Wilkes County. Last year, we processed somewhere around 1,700 chickens, 70 some pigs, 30 some cattle, a couple thousand dozen eggs. And like we say around here, this has gotten a little bit out of hand. We do pasture broilers, grass fed, grass finished beef, pasture forest raised pigs, pastured eggs. And we do a little bit of honey, not a whole lot, but just a little bit. So that's kind of where we're at and how we got here.
Man, if ever there was a great modern example of the Matrix, take the red pill or the blue pill, you guys definitely did that, didn't you? So if I'm doing my math right, so in a 6-year window, you went from a small lot in South Carolina to 70 acres and just a ton of production in Wilkes County. That's fantastic. And yes, I've been to Chuck's farm. It is a beautiful place, and he's really blessed to have attractive land like that. It's got the best of both. It's got enough cleared and rolling hills that you can do some good grazing, some nice flat, but it also has the nice privacy of the ridgelines around you, so you don't feel like a fish in a bowl.
Yeah, at least that's we've been very blessed. Yeah. Very blessed.
That's the West Virginian in me. I don't like all this flat land where everybody's looking at you. So
yeah, man, you gotta. So I've got friends, the people that I work with, I've got a lot of friends that live down in the eastern part of North Carolina. It's flat down there. I mean, it's flat. Yeah. And I ask those boys every time I talk to them, I said, when it rains, where does the water go down here? I ain't got nowhere to go. It's all just flat.
Exactly. So,
at least we do have some drainage up here.
That's right. Move it away. Cool. So Chuck had mentioned, obviously he just shot off a lot of numbers there, and we're talking a lot of production. So Chuck, how do you disseminate all of that protein to your customer base? How do you get it to them? What's your sales mechanisms?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of different sales outlets. Our primary sales outlet is farmers markets. This year we do 2 farmers markets per week. In years past, we've done as many as 4. Which became quite burdensome. I mean, that's a lot of work, and it's a lot of time away from the farm. It's a lot of time away from actual production. But our primary outlet is farmers markets. We do some on farm sales, not a lot. We'll talk about how we're working to increase that in a few minutes, I'm sure. And then we also do quite a bit of bulk sales with some delivery. For example, week before last, Sondra took a whole cow and a whole pig to a customer of ours down in Atlanta, which is about a 5-hour drive. So we do some of that. But primary outlet being farmers markets, next would be on farm sales, and then third would be probably bulk. Well, yeah. Bulk and on farm sales are pretty neck and neck, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you guys, you have a web store, correct, as well?
We do. Yep. So we have a web store, and the way that deal works is during the wintertime when markets are off, you know, around here, most markets close up somewhere around the October range, open back up April, May. During those off seasons, we deliver to our market locations for those customers that have been buying from us during the season. They can go online, place their order, and then we have an appointed meeting time, usually on Saturday morning, 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever it is. They meet us at that site, swing by, pick up their bag, off they go. We charge them online, finish the transaction there. We try to make it super simple for folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. So let's go back. I know you talked about it at the peak, you were doing as many as 4 markets. So let's use that, if you don't mind, as an example of what does a week look like for you and Sonja, because you don't have full-time employees, right? It's not like there's an army of people behind the scenes helping you. It's y'all, correct?
It is us. We've had a part-time employee who's typically about 25, 30 hours a week. And then this summer we have another part-time employee that's come on, and she'll be here through probably the 1st of August. She's a student at NC State, which is our land grant university. She's working on a degree in agriculture. She wanted to work on a farm for the summertime just to get a little bit of experience. She's about 20 hours a week. So, but primarily it's Sondra full-time. I'm not quite full-time because of my regular job. And then we've got 2 part-time folks.
Yeah. So what does when you're doing the 4 markets a week, what does a typical week look like? Not only, we know obviously you got to take care of the farm chores and do those things, so there's daily contact with all the animals.
Yeah.
But prep, set up, driving to the market, actual setting up at the market, and then of course tear down, coming back. Can you give me just kind of a rundown of what 1 week would look like in that situation?
Sure. So we'll kind of compare and contrast this to what we were doing to what we're doing now. So last year, for example, we had a market on Tuesday afternoons, and that was in a college town about 45 minutes from here. So Sondra would pack up the truck on Tuesday around lunchtime. That market ran, I think, from 4 to 7. She would pack up the truck around lunchtime. So about 2 o'clock, she would head out to the market, do that market for a couple hours, and then she was usually home by about 8:30 on Tuesday night. During the interim, between Tuesday and Saturday morning, she would repack coolers. Now, the way we work that, we've got a walk-in freezer, and our market setup consisted of usually 8 to 10 coolers, and each one of those coolers had beef, pork, and chicken. You know, we had kind of had divided up, had it neatly organized. So during the interim, she would go into the freezer and would repack all of those coolers and get all the product in there and get them all set up and ready to go. Then on Saturday morning was our big day. She would load up a truck with 8 or 10 coolers, a tent, tables, weights, market box that had all of our tablecloths and signs and money box and all that kind of stuff in it. And then I would do the same thing. She would take off and go to a market in High Point, North Carolina, and that market ran from 8:30 to 1:30. I would leave and go to another market in Clemens, North Carolina. That market ran from 8:30 to 11:30. As soon as that market was over with, I would throw all my stuff on the truck really, really quick, drive 15 minutes down the road for an afternoon market, set all that back up, do an afternoon market from 1 to 3:30. And then I would pack all that stuff up, come back home. When I got home, when she got home and when I got home, we would put our coolers back in the freezer so she could repack those sometime over the next couple of days. And then Saturday afternoon, I would basically go inside, lay down on the recliner and pass out like a dead man. Because it was just a long, hard day setting that market, doing that market setup twice. So we were doing 4 markets per week last year. Yeah. And it was a lot, you know, moving the coolers. I mean, just having all that product and trying to move that product onto the truck, off the truck, on the table, setting everything up twice, 3 times. I mean, it was a lot of work, a whole lot of work.
Yeah, for sure. My goodness, makes me tired just thinking about all that. And of course there's a lot of duplication you've had to do there as well, right? Obviously with the signage and stuff, the fact that Sondra's going one direction, you're going the other. So there's duplication of marketing and signage and then maybe even some of the equipment when it comes to coolers and things. Because if you were both at the same farmer's market, you wouldn't need as much or have to duplicate some of those things at least.
Yeah, we had two of everything. We had two tents, coolers. I think I've got 30 some red and white coolers out there under the shed right now. Double signs, double. We had to have two trucks, and that actually became a problem. I had a truck go down. I had a fuel system issue and had to borrow my father-in-law's truck. Ran it for a while. We got mine back, got it fixed. Then we had one of our other trucks went down. Had to borrow my dad's truck. Then, you know, so I mean, just the whole logistics of being able to move the stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of being held together by a thread. You get one truck go down, and man, you're kind of sunk for the day.
Yeah, yeah. So Chuck and I last year were talking about this, and really just sitting around kind of brainstorming as friends, not in a professional capacity, but just sitting around brainstorming this and trying to figure out, you know, what are the options and different things, and kicked around some stuff, and then there was even some, like you said, Chuck, some of the markets were performing well, some were underperforming, and I assume, could you speak to that a little bit? I mean, what? It's got to be a little bit of a kick in the gut sometimes when you go through all that and you end up having a bad day at the market, or you're just not getting the sales that you expect, or the turnout because of weather. What are some of the variables you ran into that really affected sales that were out of your control?
Well, you know, so farmers markets are daggone impossible to predict. So we would go to market A this week and we would sell, let's say we would sell 10 pounds of chorizo. Okay, chorizo's hot seller, man. We're packing heavy on chorizo, so this is what we're bringing next week. We go next week with 20 pounds of chorizo, you sell one. I mean, so the markets were, to begin with, they were impossible to predict, so you kind of had to pack consistently. But weather is always an issue. If you get a little bit of a rain shower, man, people are just not going to come out. Seasonality, so the weeks of major vacations, Memorial Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, those weeks we typically would see a dip, but every once in a while you'd have a holiday weekend where people, you know, the place was busting at the gills. And, you know, how do you predict that? It was just impossible to figure out what to do. And then we also had a market, and man, I hope nobody's listening from this market to this. We also had a market that we started seeing a bit of a decline because we felt like they were, and in a way I understand this, it was sort of a whosoever shall can go and set up. And we saw that market really kind of start turning into a little bit more of a flea market kind of thing, yard sale.
Yeah.
People were buying stuff to resell, bringing it in. It wasn't handcrafted stuff. And so we saw the clientele start going down because people that were originally coming to do their grocery shopping, now they were coming and they were seeing all this, you know, trinkets, toys, and trash. And excuse me. And they decided to go somewhere else. So we started seeing a decrease in the number of folks that were attending that market. And that was a driving force for us to leave that one. So farmers markets are a fickle thing. There can be some politics. I'll put that in air quotes, some politics to markets. It does become quite a bit of a social event. You know, we see a lot of our markets, there's people are coming from the neighborhood and they're all sort of visiting and that sort of thing. And sometimes that can sort of slow foot traffic down and people can't get into booths and that sort of thing. But farmers markets they're an interesting creature, interesting creature.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so you said something there that I find interesting, and I want to get your take on this, because what we're running into with our weekly home delivery service, it's almost like when you make things convenient for people, people are always going to take the maximum side of that convenience, if that makes any sense. And what we discovered is, you know, seasonality goes both ways, of course. You know, as a farm producer and you're producing stuff on your own property exclusively, then there's a seasonality as well. You know, egg production drops off in the wintertime. Broilers aren't being processed from November to February or March or whenever, you know, what your window looks like there. And so if you don't have enough inventory to carry you, or you start to run out of some of the specific cuts of things that become seasonal, then people don't, they just can't seem to understand that, or it's a sharp learning curve for them to understand, well, how come you don't have as many eggs available, or you guys always seem to sell out? That's what we run into. You know, January is like, why don't you guys have eggs available? It's like, well, you know, I let my flock go dormant, and so we just don't have them. And that's just you know, that's the way God made chickens. So, but then, so the seasonality, and then of course the weekly, being there every week, or this attitude. So I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but we had a lady that bought bacon from us. She loved the bacon. She goes, oh, I love this. And she'd get it once a week. And she did that for a couple of weeks. And I keep telling her, hey, you know, this is a finite item. We always sell out of bacon before we have hogs ready to go to the processor again at the scale that we operate. And so everybody knows that. Well, you know, the fourth week rolls around. She's like, I'd like to get some bacon. I said, we're sold out. Well, a couple of weeks before you have it back in stock? It's like, no, try, you know, several months, you know, maybe as many as 6 months type of thing. And and just trying to underscore that people don't want to buy in bulk if they think you're going to be there every week and think they're always going to have it, which is hilarious because after, like you'd mentioned, COVID, with COVID and the toilet paper run, you'd think people would still have that little bit of mindset. But I guess, you know, you don't have to stick toilet paper in the freezer, so you got to have the storage space for it in the first place. But what do you see in there as well? So you mentioned farmers markets ups and down. That was a long way to get to this question, but farmers markets ups and down. Are you seeing people coming each week and say, okay, you know, Susie came and bought X amount of meat from me this Saturday, and next Saturday she's back buying the same amount, or does she buy a month's supply and come back and you don't see her for another month?
So that really varies. And we have customers across the spectrum. We have customers that come every week and they just buy what they need for the week. And sometimes those folks have the exact same response that your bacon customer had. They'll come this week and they'll buy a ribeye steak, and they come back next week. Well, I need a couple of ribeyes. Well, I don't have any. So you'll have some next week? No, honey, I won't have none for probably another month and a half because I don't have any more cows going.
All right.
So we have some of those kinds of folks. But we've also had a number of folks that have gotten savvy to that, and we've transitioned them into bulk customers. So we've had some customers that have come and they've not been able to get what they want. And we've talked to them about, you know, you need to either buy in bulk or you need to, you know, place a pre-order so that we can get you on the list for these kinds of things. And a number of those folks, we've converted them into bulk customers. We've sold whole hogs, half cow, whole cow, bulk chicken. I had one customer. They were having trouble every week getting exactly what they wanted. They bought a whole cow, a whole pig, and 50 chickens. Man, that was a great sale. I mean, I love those. That's my best customer. Yeah. And they do that now about once a year. And so it's a lot of it is training the customer, having really explaining to them how your operation works, how the flow of product goes, and also excuse me, and also training those customers on buying some of the less desirable cuts and teaching them how to fix those into high quality meals.
Right.
Pork shank. That's one of the things we always had, this pork shank that was laying around. Nobody wanted to buy a half of a pig's leg. So Sonner came up with a recipe. We call it adult pork and beans, and it's pork shank. It's navy beans. It's some, you know, different spices in a crock pot all day. And now I can't keep pork shank. I've got folks that are always looking for that. So there's, you know, this direct to consumer thing that we do is a very relationship driven business. Mm-hmm. And you have to invest time, energy, and education into your customer for them to get the maximum value out of what you're growing and for you to be able to maximize your sales. And I think that lots of times we gloss over that and we don't think about that. We just sort of approach it from the field of dreams. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah,
man, that's not true. You've got to spend time with those customers. And what we found, you know, the customer that you stand at the market across the market table from today and spend 25 minutes explaining to them how you feed your chickens, how you move your pigs, how you grass finish your cows, how your processing schedule works, all that kind of thing, that may not be a sale today, but in 4, 6, 8, 12 weeks down the road, that customer may come back and spend a couple hundred bucks with you.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, you know, we've got to really impress the importance of really spending time with your customers and building a relationship.
Yeah. And that is so key, Chuck. And I want to park on that for a second, because this is good. This will help, you know, people listening. You look at it from the direction we come with our online sales and home delivery service versus face-to-face at a market, at a tangible retail location, whether it's on the farm or whether it's whether it's at a market. So in our situation, we don't have that ability to interact with people. You know, I have to convince people when they go to my website, it's like, okay, here's a video of this, or you can go to our YouTube channel. So hopefully there's a trust element. You see how we're doing things, and maybe that convinces you to buy at that point. But man, there's just, like you said, there's just no, you could throw a lot of money at trying to do what you and Sandra are able to do at the market with just interpersonal relationships, one-on-one discussions to say, yeah, I'll answer any question you got. And they get to see the farmer. They get to talk to him. They get to see that, you know, you guys are nice people. You're approachable, all that. And that goes a long way, especially when people are going to pay a premium for something where they could go buy, you know, the much more economical junk food at Walmart or their local box store. So it's just that personal connection there. So I appreciate you pointing that out. I think that's really huge. And that's one of the key benefits, I think, of a market is that face-to-face interaction.
100%. And, you know, really, and we've talked about it here at home. And I think that this is important to think about too. You're not just selling a package of ground beef, or you're not just selling a pack of bacon or a pork chop. You're selling a story, and you've got to get folks, fans and disciples of your story, and explain to them, you know, why you do this, and you know, really let your passion come through. And that's, I think that gets folks excited. And then they feel like they have a stake in your dream and in what you're trying to do. And so I, you know, the whole relationship thing, I don't think it can be underscored enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good. So, okay. So let's talk about the evolution of where you've been, that example that we had of the four markets to where you are today. And not only the shift in markets, but even the equipment that you're using, that's kind of helping change the dynamic of what you guys offer.
Oh man, we dove in the deep end head first here, you know, or maybe we dove in the shallow end head first. I don't know. So, Let me back up real quick. So when we started our very first couple of weeks at a farmer's market, we had a table with a I don't even think we had a red and white tablecloth. We had a table with a tablecloth, and I had this little pop-up tent, one of those easy up tents that I bought at the flea market for $40 because the leg was broken on that thing. And we were taking some chicken because we had processed a few chickens, and we were taking those, and we had went to Walmart and bought one of these little, I know you guys have seen them, these wine refrigerators, little small, tiny glass front wine refrigerator. So we were taking that thing, we were setting it up on the table, we were putting chicken in that thing, letting people try to buy out of that. And it didn't work worth a darn because that thing wouldn't stay cold enough. And by the end of the day, the chicken was it wasn't soft, but it was, you could tell it was at the, it was heating up. It was getting warm. So then we went to the coolers. We started using those coolers, and we would put an ice blanket in the bottom, pack it full of product, and then an ice blanket on top. And they worked pretty good. They stayed cold all day. So last year, a good friend of mine put in a farm store, and we were talking about it one day, and he was telling me what success he was having, how all that was going. So that kind of got our brain to sort of in gear, thinking about maybe putting in a farm store. And, I don't know how I got the idea or where it occurred to me or where I saw it or anything, but I told Sandra, I said, what if we bought a trailer and we took that trailer and we pulled the trailer to the market and set up the trailer and let folks shop in it. Then we could set it up here on farm too and have like a little farm store, you know, kind of a multi-purpose infrastructure kind of thing. So we started exploring that idea and thinking about it. And we found a 14 or 16 foot, maybe 16 foot V-nose pull behind trailer, dual axle trailer on Facebook Marketplace. I think I paid about $4,200 for it. And it had and has some issues. It's leaked in the back. You know, some of the wall facing is kind of peeling off. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not super, super nice. It was already wired, had electrical outlets. Lights, the whole deal, 30 amp service, the whole deal. So we picked that up, brought it home, went down to Lowe's and bought a couple of packs of this Pergo kind of interlocking floor, put a new floor, a hardwood floor in it. You know, man, we got to look all countryfied and stuff here. So we put a hardwood floor in that thing. And then Sandra ordered three freezers from Webstaurant. We got a small, a medium, and a large. And we bought three of the sliding glass top freezers that have baskets in them. So this thing was already wired. So we were able to plug the freezers in. I went down to Harbor Freight and bought a generator. They've actually got pretty nice little generators. Bought a generator. And then I took the trailer to some folks that I know in the neighboring county that do a lot of graphics and lettering on vehicles for ambulance manufacturers, and said, hey, can y'all letter this thing up for me? And so we put our name on it, pasture or locally raised beef, pork and chicken, mobile farm store, you know, the whole deal. And so the way this thing works now is on Saturday morning, I back the truck up to that trailer. We hook it up. We pull into our market spot. It's got one of those big, ramp style drop down rear doors. We drop that down. We've got some shopping baskets. We turn the lights on. We set our table up next door with our bagger and our cash box and a few other little local products. We can talk about that in a minute. Folks go up in the cooler or in the trailer and they shop those freezers. There's a beef freezer, a pork freezer, a chicken freezer. We've got some little shopping baskets for them, so they can go in there and they can pick out the products that they want. The nice thing, or a couple things that we've learned about this, folks will tend to buy more because now they can see all of their selections, that are not just reading off of those little menu boards that we had that listed out, you know, andouille, bratwurst, kielbasa, chorizo, sweet potato. You know, they can actually see the product. And also what we found is people will be in there walking around. They think they've got what they want. They look in the other freezer. Ooh, right there's some chicken breast. I believe I'm going to get some chicken breast too. So we've seen our per transaction sale number dollar figure actually go up since we've had this trailer, because now people can see more of their options whenever they're in there shopping. We've gotten some great reviews. Folks seem to love it. They feel like it's a little bit more of a traditional shopping style experience. We don't feel as much like the creepy guy coming through your neighborhood selling Omaha steaks out of a cooler on the back of a truck, like kind a of truck, thing. Yeah. So it's been advantageous. We've really enjoyed it. Got a lot of good feedback on it too.
That is great. So obviously this is a audio podcast, but Chuck has, I can't remember which social media format I've seen. I know I've seen it on your Facebook page, but did you guys do a video featuring that?
We did. Yep. So we done a video on the first day out. Whenever we first took that thing out, we were still trying to kind of iron out some of the wrinkles. I need to do a follow-up video. We may do that this weekend.
Yeah.
We've made changes. We've added a few things and taken some suggestions that viewers had sent in on comments and added some of that. But yeah, we've done at least one video, probably another one coming.
Yeah, I see. Is that the scrap the whole thing, or is that the hard truth about farmers market setup? Do you remember?
I think it was a little bit of both of them. I don't remember. Yeah. I think it was a little bit of both of them.
Yeah, I think Sandra in the second one, she's there in the trailer, kind of pointing some things out. So obviously we'll plug this more at the end as well. But Chuck's YouTube channel covers a lot of this. In fact, it covers a lot of his day to day. So it's very educational, very entertaining too, because you get to see Chuck try all kinds of different things, making sawdust and everything, right?
Yeah. There's never a shortage of something to do around here. Get on video. That's for sure.
Exactly. So cool. So now you've got the trailer. So, let's talk about the pre-work that needs to be done. So Sandra used to spend the off time each week loading up the coolers in the freezer. So I assume when you're done on Saturday, you back the trailer in close to the walk-in, and then she still does that same regimen during the off time. She's restocking the freezers in the trailer. But the beauty of that is there's not a lot of lifting and tugging and loading up trucks going two different directions each week now, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So when we get home on Saturday now, I back that trailer in out next to my walk-in freezer, and we plug it in. So all the freezers stay stocked and they stay plugged in. So they're all, and those things, they don't take a whole lot of juice. Mm-hmm. I mean, they pull a little power on fire up, but once they're up and running, man, it don't take much at all to keep them going. And so we park that right next to under the shed with our walk-in freezer. So then during the course of the week, actually she and I will go out and do it. It doesn't take us any time at all now to restock those freezers. We'll pull the baskets out because we keep a lot of excess product, a lot of extra product underneath the baskets. And so, and we can talk about that in a minute too. So it's really quick and easy to be able to restock that thing. I've got a little rolly cart that we just roll into the walk-in freezer. I'll call out what I need. She stocks that cart and then she brings it out and we put it in the freezer. The nice thing is she don't have to bundle up like the abominable snowman and go in that freezer for a couple of hours while she's trying to pack those coolers. So that she really appreciates that part. But we just fill that cart up, bring it out, restock the beef, the pork, and the chicken cooler. I think last week whenever we restocked it, it took us maybe 20 minutes together and we were done.
Yeah.
So a benefit that we found by doing it that way, we can take more product now to a market than we were able to in the past. In the past, I was pretty limited by what I could get, you know, in 8 to 10 coolers. Now with these freezers, there's a lot of excess space under those display baskets. And so we can get a lot more product in there. Great example. Years past, I would go to one of our markets in Clemens, North Carolina. That's our best market. And I could take probably about 30 pounds of ground beef. That was about all I could take. I might be able to squeeze a little bit more in, but about 30 was it. Wasn't at all uncommon for me to sell out of ground beef by, you know, 10 or 10:30. And I'm out, Saunders at another market, 45 minutes away. And she's sitting there with 28 pounds of ground beef. She's not hardly sold any. So we needed, we needed that product back at that other market because of demand. Well, last week, whenever we went to that same market, we packed 50 pounds of ground beef and we sold out of 50 pounds of ground beef by 11 o'clock. So we were able to extend the amount of that product and serve additional customers because we were able to carry more product in those freezers than we had been in the coolers. So we're able to serve customers a little bit better now because now we can keep those high demand choices, we can pack heavy on those and customers know if they're going to come by that we're probably going to have it unless they just show up at, 10, 11:29 and we're closing down the thing anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. So it sounds like, I know we've talked about this. I think we talked about this before we actually hit the record button, but the fact that, the way you guys are doing your markets now, you don't need to have Sondra go one direction and you go the other with the trailer. So there's not a fight for the trailer. You guys have reorganized what markets you're involved in. So you can have one set up at a certain time, correct?
Yeah, we sat down and we looked at our market sales and what was happening at the different markets. One of the markets that we done last year, they didn't reopen this year. It was a very, very small community market. There were only four or five vendors that did it. It was in the parking lot of the Methodist Church, and they were kind of doing it as an outreach, and they were taking the vendor fees and using that to buy food to provide for shut-ins and folks that were homebound and that kind of thing. They shut that down this year, so that was a market we didn't have to do. But saw kind of a decline in numbers in our sales over there. We figured, hey, we need the product over here. We could, expand and focus a little bit more attentively on the market that's growing and doing well, kind of that whole 80-20 rule, really focusing our efforts on where we're getting the most bang for our buck. And another thing, I'm hesitant to admit this, that gum, Sondra and I like working together. We like hanging out. We like interacting with those customers together. We kind of play well off of each other. There's some playful banter. And, we get along. We like working together. And it was an opportunity for us to go back and spend more time together. So that was another big driver for it, too.
Yeah, I think you're correct in saying it. I think you worded it wrong, though. I think you need to say that Sondra tolerates you. Yeah. No, that's great, man. That is so key. And we all, especially with a homesteading, small farming mentality, we feel like we got to do it all. And we get to a point and say, well, if I don't do this anymore, then I'm actually admitting defeat. I'm backtracking. But it sounds like, I know when you guys at the end of the market season, you'll be able to sit down and look at the numbers, but it sounds like you're scaling down in the number of markets that you are involved in is actually going to increase profitability and free up more time for you to do other things that need to get done on the farm that could possibly be revenue generators as well. So that's fantastic.
You're exactly right. We've gotten our Saturday afternoons back.
Yeah.
Now, instead of her getting home at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon and me getting home at 5, we're both back here by 1. And so we've got all Saturday afternoon to, work around here or, go out on date night or, do something fun or whatever. So it's really improving our quality of life, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. And I think, you know, and this applies not only to markets, but I think it applies to enterprises too, whether it's chickens or rabbits or pigs or cows or whatever. As a homesteader or a farmer, if you find something's not working, letting that thing go is not admitting defeat. It's being smart and focusing your time on what does work.
Yeah.
You know, we done rabbits for a while. We found we just didn't like rabbits. You know, it was taking up time. We let it go. This market was a suck on our time. We didn't feel like it was profitable for us. We let it go. So, you know, man, it's okay to back up, punt, reevaluate, and do something different. There is no shame at all in that. None at all.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because you can drive yourself crazy just doing the same thing over and over again. So Chuck, let's get down to, because I think people that watch the channel, people that obviously listen to this, they're going to be like, okay, this is a great idea. You know, this isn't Chuck's exclusive epiphany, but he's really coalescing it to something that we can now think, does this make sense for us for our market? So for those people that are now there, you've got them thinking, okay, it's time to go do this. This makes a lot of sense. What would you caution them on? So maybe we can go through cost. Maybe we can go through some things that you guys have discovered right now that maybe, hey, you know, make sure the market's okay with this. You got the sound of the generator. You got all these type of things, the larger footprint that the truck takes and the trailer takes. What are some of those cautions you would give to people that are ready to go buy that trailer and do the same thing now?
Yeah. So first off, I think you need to make sure that you've got a market that's going to be able to help you pay for this. So you need to know your numbers. What are your weekly sales on average? You know, like I said earlier, it's impossible to predict, but you can get it over. Look at your numbers over time. Do you have a market that's going to be able to support this? Is the foot traffic there to support it? Is the sales there to support it? Once you kind of check that box, if you decide you want to go with this, then you need to talk to your market manager and make sure that, like you said, that you've got space. We had to go from renting one booth space to renting two booth spaces because now we've got this trailer in half of the booth space and then our tent with the checkout stuff in the other half of that booth space because we've still got to maintain that presence on the aisle where folks are walking. You can't stack it backwards. Mm-hmm. Everything needs to be there and be accessible. So you got to make sure that you've got space. You talked about the generator. We did spend some money. We went to Harbor Freight and I bought one of those Predator Whisper Quiet generators. I put it up on the back of the truck, and really you hear a little bit of a hum, but it's very, very quiet. It works great. Works out nice. Do you have the product to support it? You know, like I said earlier, we do a couple, you know, 1,700 chickens a year, 70 or 80 pigs, 30 some cows. You've got to have product in those freezers. If you've got folks coming in and there's only, you know, two or three items in a freezer that, you know, that, yeah, you might get a sale, but you're not going to maximize the effect of having those freezers in that space. So you got to be sure that you can supply it. Can you keep those freezers full? In terms of startup cost, I'm glad to go through the numbers. I spent $4,200. You might want to write this down so you can give us a total here in a minute, Troy. I'm terrible at doing math in my head and I don't have anything to write with.
Yeah.
I spent $4,200 on the trailer.
Uh-huh.
I spent $1,000 on the generator. I spent $3,000 on the freezers, and I spent $1,000 in graphics and other miscellaneous kinds of get it ready sort of stuff. So where's that land me?
You're just a cat's whisker under 10 grand. Yeah. You're $9,200.
Yeah. So that's about what we spent. Now, you know, just to kind of give you a, you know, frame of reference on where, and we're doing two markets a week. So just to give you a frame of reference on where we're at, we generally will do somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 in sales per week.
Okay.
So, you know, we felt like we could, you know, we had a little money squirrel back, you know, it was time to invest in the business. So we were able to, you know, we feel like we're able to cover the cost on the market set up, and then all of our other costs. And we're, you know, we think it will pay for itself midway through the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, looking at your profit margin, and we don't have to get into that, but let's just say for the sake of easy math that your profit margin is 100%. So if you're doing, let's say 3,000 a week. So in 3 weeks, you've got 9 grand, you're close to there, $4,500 in profit. So yeah, in 6 weeks, you've hit that 9 grand mark. Now, obviously you're going to have some, consumable expenses. You're going to have the gasoline, because this is not a light rig now, right? I mean, you're towing this with a 2500, I believe.
Yep. I've got a 3/4 ton Chevrolet, and then we have to fill the generator up. The nice thing about that generator is, And, you know, like I said, these things don't take a lot of, don't take a whole lot of, power. And we're turning the lights on in the trailer too. I'm also running an extension cord out. That old refrigerator I was telling you about, that glass front refrigerator.
Yeah.
We're sourcing some cheese from Ashe County Cheese, the only cheesemaker in North Carolina. So we've got that glass front refrigerator out there. Now we're putting some cheese in it. So we're repurposing some infrastructure there that we've used in the past. But I can fill that generator up on Saturday morning. I can run that thing. I can run it all day Saturday, all day in our Tuesday market, and still have about a half tank fuel to go. So I could run that thing for 2 weeks on a tank.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. And those inverter generators, you know, they're great in the fact that they're not like the old school generators where if it's a 5,000 watt or 5,000 volt generator, it's cranking out 5,000 volts all the time. So it's using the fuel to generate that much power, whether you're using it or not. Whereas an inverter, it's going to rev up or rev down based upon that load. So like Chuck said, when he first plugs it in, those compressors start up a bit of a draw, but then it's just sipping the electricity at that point going forward, especially if you've got a lot of product in there and you got that thermal mass. So I think that's a really neat point you made there about the cheese. So looking at this, so people that are listening and say, well, yeah, I think I can justify this. I think I got enough product, but I'm going to have some vacancy in this. Then look at partnering with some other sources. And of course, you got to get them to play ball. And I assume, Chuck, I'm just going to make this assumption that you've got a wholesale price from the cheese people, and then you sell it to match their retail. So there's skin in the game for everybody. So you're making a little bit of profit off of it, but you're also just broadening the product offering that you have for your market.
We do, and the reason that we went out and sourced some other products is on the days that we open that thing up here on the farm. So we actually will set the trailer up here on the farm, and we will advertise out farm store open today. And the reason we do that for years, and I don't mean to backtrack, the reason I do that for years, I had people say, do you have a retail outlet or do you have a store? No, you can come shop at the freezer if you want to, but I mean, you'd have to bundle up, put on three coats, and all you receive are just cardboard boxes. Now this gives us the ability to have that on farm store. But the reason that, like I was saying about the additional products, on those days that we're opening up here, we want folks to not only come out here for meat, but we want them to have some other choices as well.
Yeah.
My friend that opened up his farm store, he carries veggies and raw milk and personal care products and just a whole breads, desserts, a whole host of things. Well, I'm not quite that big and I don't have that much capacity here, but we did want to offer some additional choices. So we went to Ashe County Cheese, and yes, we did set up a wholesale account. So we're selling some cheese. I've got a good friend of mine. He and his wife make some jams and jellies in their certified kitchen. And so we carry some of that. There's a local granola maker here close to us. He makes homemade granola. I've got some really nice packaging, sources all of his ingredients local. I think he's got 8 or 10 flavors. So we're now carrying some local Brushy Mountain Granola Company granola. And then I've got another guy that we're sourcing some honey off of.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just added some products there that folks, you know, kind of fit. You know, I'm not going to go in there and add, you know, birdhouses or anything like that. We're looking more at, you know, consumable food kinds of things and trying to support other local farmers and get some of their product out and, you know, hopefully generate some sales for them too.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Sounds like I need to get some West Virginia maple syrup down there to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, man. That'd be perfect. That'd be perfect.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And and like you said, just supporting other farms. Excuse me. I think I'm catching what you're catching. Supporting other farms and being able to make a little bit of money off that. So it justifies the expense of the cooler, keeping that cool, the retail space it's taken up, the weight, all that type of stuff. So everybody wins in that situation. And of course, since you're branding it or you're leaving their brand on it, then it becomes an opportunity for them to say, oh yeah, XYZ Cheese Company. That's cool. Yeah. That's great to know that they're here. So give me some details. What's the parameters around when you decide to open the trailer up as the farm store there on property? Are you doing that around special events? Are you trying to do a seasonal thing, calendar thing?
So we're trying to iron that out. So the first couple of times that we opened it up because it was some Saturdays that we didn't have a market. We had just got the trailer. We'd had sort of a an opening day or a community day. We went and set up, and then we had a couple of sort of fallow Saturdays. So we opened up there. We've got to figure that out. We would like to get kind of a consistency, maybe a Friday from, you know, noon to seven or something like that, so that folks kind of get in the mode. So we've had the farm store open 3 days here on farm. None of those days were just kind of blow your socks off. For a couple of reasons. Number one, we've got to get people trained. People have got to learn that we're open, learn that we're here, that they can come out and do their shopping, that it's okay to come to the farm. So we've got to train folks. Number two, I'm not right off the side of the highway. Right. You know, I'm not like super easy to get to, but I take inspiration from folks like Joel Salton and Jordan Green, who also are not right on the side of the highway, but they still attract people into their store. So what we're trying to do and what we're thinking about doing is sort of combining the store being open with more open house of the farm. So come out, see the farm, walk the farm, see the pigs, see the chickens, see the cows, you know, collect an egg, you know, figuring out some of those special events and having that store open whenever there's something else going on. And, you know, another thing that I'll kind of talk about a little bit, I don't know if you're interested. If you don't like this, you can cut this. You can edit this part out of the podcast. We had, and I'm not fussing, we had so many people that wanted to come out to the farm and tour and talk and look at things. And we were doing some of that. And we had a lot of folks that we were spending hours with. And basically, they would come in and take advantage of our time and then leave. Well, now what we're doing is, if you want to come out and do that, we're going to start in the store, show you our store, walk you around, and then we're going to come back and end in the store too. So we're going to give people a couple opportunities to be able to buy and kind of capture some of that, that time that folks are spending here on the farm with us.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not cutting that out because that's so important. And I know the way you guys have a setup, and like you said, you're not directly in a major urban area. You're off the beaten path a bit, but just if you've got one family that shows up and says, yeah, I'm interested in buying a pork chop off of you, but I'd like you to spend the next 3 hours taking me around, showing me the pigs and giving me all these details, asking a bunch of questions. You know, that time is money. You know, even for a farmer, time is money. People may think, well, you're at home. Well, yeah, why is this costing you anything? You're going to be standing around anyway. It's like, well, no. But yeah, taking that situation, saying, okay, we got to have some grace here and we got to have some balance. Yes, we want to educate people on the food, and maybe people are looking at, you know, can I do something small scale on my own? So they want to get that motivation and some ideas, but they have to recognize that your and Sandra's time is valuable. All of our time is valuable when it comes to that. So if you're going to take a farmer's 3 hours and ask all these questions and just download, you know, Chuck's whirlwind, 6 years of farming experience now that he's just, you know, just moved exponentially on, then there's got to be some quid pro quo there. There's got to be a, hey, okay, I'll at least buy some product from you type of thing. So you'd like to think that people have that common sense. And I would say most people, most good rural people do. Sometimes you get some people that don't, and you gotta. So yeah, I like what you're doing there, putting some measures in place to say, okay, we're going to limit this, or we're going to set some hours, or we're going to have a specific flow. We're going to have off limits area of the farm, and we just got to help keep the riffraff down, and we don't want a bunch of tire kickers coming in here, and wasting a lot of time.
Yeah, and I don't mean to sound hypocritical because I was talking a while ago about building that relationship. And that is one thing, but really it's not out of the question to have somebody show up here on farm and then want to spend, you know, a couple hours with you, and, you know, and your time is valuable. Just because you're home doesn't mean you don't have anything to do. Home is where I work. You know, you wouldn't really appreciate me coming in and sitting down in your office or at, you know, your place of business and putting my feet up and talking to you for a couple hours and limiting your productivity without there being some reciprocity there. You know, I mean, you really do kind of need to show your appreciation in some way. And I think having the store really kind of drives folks, because now you really can see that there is a tangible product here. There's something that you can take home, besides the knowledge that you've gotten from spending the time here. We're glad to help with that, but there's some tangible products that you can take home. Having that store has really opened that opportunity up, because, you know, we've got the food products in there. We've got a little bit of merch, you know, some hats and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it does give folks an opportunity to, you know, pick up something, a souvenir or something to take home from the farm. And it works. I think it's going to help iron some of those wrinkles out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And I love the idea or what you said there at the beginning of just educating the customer on that, to say, hey, we start getting into a rhythm and we have this set up and we have these type of interactions, then as the customer base understands that more and more, then, you know, that Friday afternoon can become more profitable. And the beauty of that, like you said, is you're not moving the trailer. You're not moving any product around. You're saying, come over here. This is where the trailer's parked through the week. And you can peruse and go through it. And like you said,
that's the nice thing about having this thing on property is you can generate some sales here without there being the outlay of time and fuel to move it to the customer. Mm-hmm. The customers can come to you. And we're really hoping over time that will sort of build and grow. You know, we have aspirations of building a formal on farm store, being able to expand some of those product lines and some of those local offerings and that kind of thing. But this really was kind of a test in the concept. You know, is the concept of an on farm store, does that work? So now we've got to work through, you know, getting people trained, getting folks out here, opening it up, seeing if it's going to work. And that'll help drive our decisions on down the road. You know, I'm glad to invest into our business, but I don't want to invest foolhardily. I want to make sure that we're making good, solid investments that are going to pay off over time. And if we set this farm store up and we just, you know, you can't go out there and grab them by the collar and drag them in, they're not going to come, then maybe building something on site is not the way to go.
Yes.
So this helps us kind of drive that decision and make a good decision on it.
Yeah, that's huge, Chuck. And I think, you know, we can't let that go without underscoring that. So having the trailer here, testing the on-farm store, like you said, is a great model to try before you pour the first thing of concrete or you nail the first board up for a permanent structure. Now, permanent structure on the farm can always be used for something, but it's not like you got a bunch of cash and material laying around that you can just throw something up on a whim. So I love the measured response to this and the testing as you go forward, just to see how people react and if you get enough traffic to merit doing something like that. So good stuff.
Yeah, my buddy that put the farm store in on his property, he, you know, in the first 30 days, I think he said he had somewhere around $30,000 to $40,000 in sales. And, you know, those kinds of numbers you'll get stars in your eyes over something like that.
Yeah.
The difference is he's about 3 miles off of Interstate 85, which is a major interstate going through the center of North Carolina. And he's, where he's located, you know, within probably a 20 mile radius, he's probably 750,000 million people. I mean, he's in a tightly, densely populated area. Man, I'm up here in the foothills. I mean, you know, we watch Saturday Night Live on Wednesday afternoon back here. I mean, that's kind of how far back we are. So, you know, I got to get people learn to drive out here without being afraid of the Episcopalians handling the snakes. Kind of thing.
yeah, we've got the same thing. I mean, we've got the last half mile is a one lane gravel road. You don't want to meet anybody on that road. So it makes it tough, but it can be done. Well, Chuck, I want to be sensitive to your time. I know, today is a farm day as well. And I hope, I'm meaning to ask you, how's Sandra's foot? Is she back to 100%?
Oh yeah, man. She's got the foot thing healed up. I've had this upper respiratory pestilence kind of thing going on for about 11 days. She's picked it up now. So she's on the front end of that.
All right.
But, foot's all better. We're just kind of dealing. And, you know, part of it may be allergies. I mean, everything up here is coated in yellow.
Yes.
But she's on the mend. But the thing about it is, you know, whenever you're farming, you don't get sick days, you don't get holidays, you don't get weekends, man. You just got to power through and keep on trucking.
Yeah, I noticed with one lame leg, she's kind of walking in circles sometimes. You had to readjust her and get her pointing in the right direction. So.
she does that. But she's a trooper. I tell you, I don't give Sandra enough credit. That's one of the hardest working women I've ever known. And she's a go-getter. She's committed. She's all in.
And she is one heck of a cook too. I can speak directly to that.
Yeah. I should weigh 400 pounds. I don't know why I don't.
You should. She must smack your hand every once in a while when you're reaching for seconds or something. But yeah, I know would be. Goodness.
We've got enough to eat. She says you've had enough sometimes. So we've got enough.
That's great. Well, man, before I let you go, how can people find you through various online social platforms?
Yep. So we're on all the biggies. First place, SheritonParkFarms.com is our website. Go over there and check it out. We got a lot of info over there on who we are, how we do things, some nice pictures of the farm and that kind of thing. On Facebook, Sheraton Park Farms. We're on Instagram, not so much on Instagram. We do some stuff over there, Sheraton Park Farms. And then our big social media outlet is over on YouTube, Sheraton Park Farms there. We've got about 71,000 subscribers now, so we're doing some videos. That's a great way to learn more about us and what we're doing, how we do things around here. So go over there and check us out.
Yeah, Chuck's channel is very entertaining. I got to say, he's much more photogenic than we are over here at Red Tool House. So he and his team do a good job there. So definitely check them out if you haven't started watching them. And not only entertaining, but really good insight in pastured operations. Because as he's already mentioned, he's covering the gamut. So you know, from the beef down to the chickens and the pigs, all of that. So it's really neat to see how he's doing that in tandem. Well, man, I really appreciate you coming on. It's good talking with you. Anxious to see you again. Hopefully I'll see you before September, before the homesteading festival. But if not, at least we'll see you in September.
Yeah, man, looking forward to it. Appreciate you having me on. I enjoyed it.
Well, I really appreciate Chuck coming on the podcast. I just really enjoy talking to him. It's been neat developing that friendship over the years with he and Sandra. They've got a really neat thing going on down there in North Carolina. So be sure to check them out on their YouTube channel or Facebook page and see what they've got going on. And as I mentioned in the interview, we've got our Homesteading-ish conference coming up in Charleston, West Virginia in September. If you want to know more about that, just go to homesteading-ish.com. And we have tickets on sale right now. And I believe the tickets are just $60. So Joel Salatin, Sean and Beth Doherty, Josh Draper from Stony Ridge Farmer, Chuck, me, Nathan from Out of the Woods. He'll be talking sawmills. So it'll be some really good stuff, very applicable to Appalachian homesteading. All right, well, that'll wrap it up. I pray you all have a great week. Take care.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of the Pastured Pig Podcast. To learn more about our podcast or to submit topics or recommend guests for future episodes,
visit redtoolhouse.com.